Hello, everyone, and welcome to Raw Talks podcast with me, Sarah, together with Simba and Mark from Living with the Spirit. And we are here to offer you raw and real conversations about physical, emotional, and spiritual transformation. We are specialized in regulating the nervous system, somatic work, energetics, shadow work, and deep and unique body work. Our purpose here today is to share our journey and our teachings with conscious leaders just like you and to unlock anything that is holding you back from living a life of freedom and purpose. We are truly grateful and honored to have you with us, and let's explore.
Howdy, everyone. Mark here at Living with the Spirit, and I'm happy to share a topic that we normally don't talk about. But Simba and I, have been talking about this topic for a while amongst ourselves because we're both very interested in it. So today we'd like to discuss artificial intelligence, but not just from the technological standpoint. We're going to talk about it like we always do from the nervous system perspective. So Simba, why don't you just tell us a little bit about what are your initial thoughts on artificial intelligence?
I think it's a great tool that you can use to do good or you can use to do bad, like anything else. It really comes down to intention. And I also think, well, you can talk more about that, that it has a bias, right? That's really your field and your expertise going into your PhD in the area. But I think really when it comes to the AI, it has the capacity to help you if you know how to use it right. And it has the capacity to make you complacent and lazy and even further disconnected if you use it as a crutch. What I mean by that is AI can show you, for instance, when I'm writing texts, I asked AI to help me to polish them up. But then I also asked AI, how did you do it? So it can teach me something, just like a normal teacher would do, and it can show me what I've done differently or what I can do differently. And what that does to my nervous system, it empowers me and it shows me ways of how I can actually improve something and do it differently. But if I use it because I feel I cannot do it, then I become dependent on it, right? And what that does, it makes me more complacent and I wouldn't say lazy, but less creative and less embodied. And you can even see it in the text, right? If someone just takes a text and let the ChatGPT or whatever source they use write the text, you can see certain things that this is an AI text. And then when I pick up on it and read it, it creates a little bit of a riff, right? Like a distance, because it doesn't feel authentic. And it doesn't really feel like this is a person who wrote it. It feels more like this is an automated machine that wrote something for me to try to buy something. It tries to simulate an emotion for me, but it doesn't really know how to do it because it's not a human. So it becomes this different vibe about it. And I can pick up on it very quickly because I can feel when a person has written something because it touches me different in the heart and in my nervous system than when a machine has written something.
Yeah. I mean, there's so, everything you said, we could go into so many little micro topics of that. But this is your first time joining us on this podcast. At Living with the Spirit, we provide services that help people regulate their nervous system, somatic experiences like TRE, which Simba is a globally recognized trainer in TRE. And so AI isn't something that we normally talk about. But because it's become such a prevalent topic in society that it's basically something that is currently being used and in the future will increase, it's going to affect everyone. So we thought, let's take a little dive into AI and talk about it from the nervous system perspective. And it just so happens that I am in the final semester of my PhD in artificial intelligence. So I've been studying this for 5 years. And I've watched AI grow from its infancy when I first started my PhD program five years ago, before the release of ChatGPT, before all of this automation was available. And when I first started my PhD, I was working with image recognition tools, and it was only having about a 60% accuracy, which is pretty bad. You know, it's not useful. And now, you know, 5 years later, this the massive transformation in the technological ability, it's very impressive. And, you know, I think a lot of people are enjoying the use of AI, especially like ChatGPT. It's probably the most commonly used tool right now, especially for people working in the professional field who have to do any type of writing. And like Simba mentioned earlier, you know, when there's kind of like a little flair to the text that you get from ChatGPT that you can kind of notice, especially for people who use it quite a bit. They start to notice some similarities and patterns in the text. And one of the conversations that I've been having with other people and with Simba is, what happens when people can no longer discern between what was created by a human and what was created by an AI? And what happens in your nervous system in that dilemma? So if you're looking at text, or if you're looking at an image and you can't decide, okay, I'm not sure if this was AI. I don't know if it's real. I don't know if it's the truth. I don't know if I'm being deceived. That can really upset your nervous system in a variety of different ways, bringing up past traumas, bringing up fears. So Simba, tell us what's the situation when people start to encounter this problem?
It shifts reality, right? Reality is a matter of perspective, belief systems, and for instance, like you mentioned, the video recognition and the voice recognition has come to the point where you can take footage from someone and you can create a video, and it's the right voice, it's the right movement of the face, so it looks like someone did it. But if you don't have the capacity and grounding in yourself to actually do a little bit of research, who posted the video, is this really true, is this congruent with this person's character? Because there's so much sensationalism, because people want to get clicks and traffic, yeah, and leads and all of these things, right? So what happens is that we can now use videos to affect people's nervous system and get them to react, making you say something that's very out of your character and have a video and it's your voice. And then I can say, that's real, or someone else can say, that's not real. And what that creates after a while is you don't know what's real anymore. You can't. Right. And that can start to definitely create problems, because who says what, right? Anywhere, like in media, politics, I can think, you know, like criminal systems, when they have a footage of someone, did you really say it, or was this? So it warps reality to the point where it becomes hard to discern what we perceive as real and what we don't perceive as real. But not to go into too much of a negative mode about it, that's why I think the nervous system really comes in. Because the more regulated you become, you get this visceral body-based feeling about it. When you're grounded, when you're not completely biased and think this person is a saint, whatever this person has said or not said, that's something holy, that's something great. You know, this person cannot make any mistakes. When you get to a point where you connect to yourself and you become more objective because you're calm, you're just observing your own thoughts, your own emotions, your sensations, people around you, then you're able to discern using your body-based system what's real and what's not. And Stephen Porges, the founder of polyvagal theory, called it neuroception. Basically, yeah, means all your organs, all your systems in your body is communicating with your mind to make sure we're safe, or tell us that we're not safe, without cognition, without thinking, without a bias, without a story. We just exist when we scan our environment. And when we do that, when we come from that grounded state that we can do through the somatic practices that you mentioned, it's easier, it's not 100% still, but it's easier to discern what feels real and what feels artificial, right? You get this feeling when something is real because your nervous system connects to someone, and you will get a feeling when it's not real.
Yeah. What was that term you used from Porges, the neuro...
Neuroception.
Neuroception. Yeah, I love that term because it actually has some quite interesting connections to AI and, you know, neural networks and things. And I kind of get nerdy about that. But if I was to put that into layman's terms for people who don't know what that means, I would like to describe it as your internal truth detector. And it's a truth detector that comes from here, not from here, right? So if you have an internal truth detector, you know, it's kind of like your bullshit detector. What's really going on here with the situation? Some people might say it's your gut feeling also. So it's coming from below the neck, you know, the bodily sensation. And so I would say that a good practice for people to do is when they come across information online, you know, whether it's an image, a video, or a text, and you kind of like get that little bit of a, not quite sure about this. And maybe the text is alarming, or maybe the video is something sensational, and it might send your nervous system into a reaction, a little bit of an activation. So in that moment, if you can ground yourself, take a breath, pat your shoulders, come back into your body, and then ask your body, you know, help me discern the truth from this. Is this real? Is it not real? Do I need to be worried? Do I not need to be worried? Is this something that I can just keep scrolling? Okay. All right. Yeah. So then you feel your body, but your mind will probably do the opposite. Your mind will, let me fact check that. Let me call my friend and see what he thinks about this, you know, and then you get trapped into the, and somewhat of an engineered purposeful design to get your nervous system activated. So with the somatic practices and the grounding, we can come back to reality, use our internal fact checking, and not get affected by it, you know, and find peace and truth through that practice. Does that sound accurate to what you were describing with the polyvagal theory?
And I mean, this is really your area, I would say, in terms of, if I understand your thesis right, is really to investigate or look at how human bias affects AI, because AI is coded, right? Even though it's self-gradable or it learns and it develops on its own, it's still developed by someone, and there's still a human bias that will seep into its code or into its language or interactions with us. So we might look at it as objective, and it is to a certain point, but there's also an agenda with everything that happens today because of strong forces with politics and monetary reasons and so on. So I think the main thing, what I'm trying to say, is connecting to the nervous system is going to be the most authentic thing you can do when we progressively move into technology. And I mean, maybe you can share more about, you know, how can the bias really seep into AI? You know, what have you seen in your research?
Well, it's really messy, to be honest. So my previous research, which is published, looking at, you know, how can humans discern bias that they might find in AI images and text, and then also to self-reflect and see how are my own internal biases affecting what I'm reading. So there's like kind of like a double bias situation happening. And that's actually how AI was created. So all artificial intelligence systems were trained on data. And that data mostly came from the internet. So all of the videos, all of the text, all of the images that is currently alive on the internet, AI systems were trained on that data. Now, if you look at that data, you know, if we zoom out and look at it holistically, a majority of the data is Western. It's, you know, highly, or, you know, mid to high affluent information from, you know, there's a lot of information on the internet that comes from, you know, universities and, you know, published information. So there's a certain level of reading ability that you have to have in order to discern that information. You know, there's a lot of, you know, Western influence from America and Europe. So it's most of the data that it was trained on comes from that lens. So whenever you ask AI a question, it's going to give you an answer based majority from that Western influence information. I'm not saying that's a bad thing or it's a good thing. It's just simply that there is an inherent bias baked into the system. And now AI systems have are called bias filters to try to reverse the bias to make it more inclusive. And those bias filters have bias baked into them because their goal is to reduce the bias. So that's like now we're back in a double bias situation. So what that means for the average user is that anything that you get back from an AI system is going to have multiple layers of bias baked into it. So that's why, you know, I usually encourage people to use AI in a way to help you, but don't use it in a way that you just, you know, copy paste exactly what it says, or, you know, believe everything it says if it was 100% true. And that's the thing about technology. All technology is inherently neutral. And let's break it down to even something very simple. A knife is a technology. You know, in the broadest sense of the definition of the word technology, is a tool or an instrument used to help people. A knife is a tool, and you can use it to help people. So it is a technology. I can use it to spread jam on my toast, or I can use it to stab someone. So it's the user's intent is what creates the negative or the positive aspect of the technology. And that's how I feel about AI. It's a neutral tool that can be used either way.
Mm. How would you say that you having this information, like very in depth about what happens with AI and how it works and how it affects us humans and the origins, like you just shared, and also being a theory provider, working with EFT and all the somatic tools that you've done here for the last couple of years, both as a client, but also as a practitioner and becoming a teacher in many of these arts, how are you using this information to guide your clients or the people that come to you that want to, maybe gain some clarity on how do I navigate myself in this technology jungle and with all of this information going on everywhere?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a variety of different ways that we can use AI to beneficially impact humanity. For example, in the EFT practice, which stands for Emotional Freedom Techniques, using the Chinese meridian acupressure points, tapping and speaking out loud phrases to shift limiting beliefs in your body. That's one of the practices that we use. If you were to go to ChatGPT right now and say, hey, can you help me write some phrases for my EFT tapping because I'm having tension headaches? It would generate a pretty good tapping, you know, solution for you. There's direct ways like that, and then there are indirect ways. Like we often, you know, help people who are practitioners. So you know, TRE providers, for example, other types of mental health coaches are usually trying to, you know, establish themselves, on social media, trying to establish their businesses, trying to grow their marketing. So here at Living with the Spirit, Sarah, who's not here with us today, she is an expert in helping people to grow and launch their businesses online. And Sarah has a fantastic setup where she walks people through the different ways to use AI to help them launch their businesses and launch their campaigns and their online product suites and things. So maybe I didn't answer the question exactly the way you were asking it, Simba, but that's kind of what came to mind. Was there a different thing that you were asking?
No. That's definitely what I was looking for. But also, I was curious, like, how do you, like, if I, like, what can I do? Because you have extensive knowledge in both fields, right? So, like, if I come and, like, wow, this is interesting, how can I work with you? What can I expect? What can I kind of get out from someone that has knowledge in both fields, nervous system and artificial nervous system, if we were to put it like that?
Oh, that's funny. Artificial nervous system. Yeah, I think that in my background, when my approach to looking at AI comes from a deep educational philosophy, and that philosophy is all about tinkering. And tinkering means just getting in there and playing with it until you understand it better. So, you know, if someone else tells you AI is like this, and someone else says AI is like this, you really don't know until you do it yourself. So what I encourage people to do is to just get in and play with it, experiment with it, try some things out with a kind of like an open-ended way of approaching it. You know, you're not necessarily trying to start a business or trying to write a paper, just kind of getting in there and having fun with it. And that was the advice that I gave you too, Simba, whenever you were first messing around with the image generators. And maybe you can share just briefly your process and what the end result of that was.
Yeah, I made a tattoo and I didn't really had a clear idea. I wanted to, it's funny, I'm born in the traditional Chinese zodiac sign of the wooden rat. And I'm also very much into Taoism and traditional Chinese medicine and Neigong and all of these different energy practices that we practice here, Lubanpai being the main form. And I wanted like a rat to encompass this, right? Like a rat doing these movements. But obviously there was no such tattoos or nothing like that online, right? So I did what everyone else did. I started Google and tried to find something. And I was like, I can't really find anything. And you said, have you tried AI rendition? I was like, what is that? And then you started showing me a few different ones. And then I learned really how to work with AI. Like I wrote down what I wanted, like for the AI program. And then I asked ChatGPT to make it more comprehensive and relatable for an AI picture rendering program. And then I asked it, how did you do this? And then I put it into a program. So basically I asked it how it's working, and it got me to reflect on it and taught me how is this process happening, right? So it was teaching me as it was doing something, which is very cool, because that was the main thing that I was missing many times when I grew up. The teacher said, this is the way it is, and I can't explain why. And then I felt very disembodied, disinspirited. I didn't like it. And now, even though it was machine, it was telling me how it was doing, and it was telling me different ways that I could do it, not this is the way to do it. It was saying, this is one way, this is another tonality, this can get you this. So it was really teaching me the different options and more offering opportunities for me rather than saying this is the way to go. And I think that heavily comes from it's more objective than a human. It doesn't have as much bias. So that was a very cool process, actually.
Yeah. So, you know, like if you were looking for a picture the traditional way, let's say you were looking for a picture of a banana next to a cup, you would go to Google and search banana next to cup and then go to images and try to find it. And, you know, you're not going to find the exact one you want. But now you can go to an image generator and say, produce an image of a banana next to a cup with the lighting coming from the left. And, you can just add all of these details. And that's what Simba was able to do. And he got an image that was perfect. And then now it's tattooed.
Really strong. It's a really cool image.
Yeah. And that just shows you how quickly things are improving and growing, and that these tools actually are pretty cool and very useful. And I like what you mentioned about like learning along the way. And the educational philosophy that I believe in is exactly like that. And there's a quote that I really like that says, if you give the student the answer, you rob them of the experience of finding out for themselves. And that's what real learning is about. Yeah. And I think that's for TRE and for everything else that we do.
Hello, Simba from Limited Spirit here. Just taking a quick pause to share a special opportunity for those of you that are already TRE providers. After spending time with the TRE founder, Dr. David Berselli, I'm excited to share what I learned with him. So we are offering a TRE Mastery Retreats here in Northern Thailand this November. It's a chance for TRE providers, certification trainers to learn new skills, work with others, and experience a fusion of TRE blended with other modalities like bodywork, massage, breathwork, ice bath, sword fighting, and much more. So go ahead and check out livingwiththespirit.com. That is livingwiththespirit.com for more info. Thank you for listening to our podcast.
You know, the somatic experiencing and the way that we work with our students and clients through the nervous system is we don't ever say, sit down, do this grounding technique. You know, like we work with the nervous system in a way that the people learn more about themselves along the way. So there's a lot of interconnectedness between the somatic work, the nervous system, and artificial intelligence, which that's why we wanted to talk about this today, because it's such an interesting and unique blend of topics that's relevant. And I think we could probably do several more podcasts on this topic alone, going into deeper aspects. So if you find this interesting and you want to hear more, if you've got questions, just go down to the YouTube comments and leave some questions for us. We'll be glad to dive deeper into any of the specific aspects of AI and also how it relates to the human body, how it relates to the nervous system. And if you want to hear more about our understanding of the truth indicator that Simba mentioned earlier, that's really, you know, where the experience happens inside of your body and not in your mind. And the goal of Living with the Spirit, everything that we do is to help people realize that through the nervous system and through the grounding practices and through TRE and EFT, breath work. These are the things that we provide to help people get out of their mind and into their bodies so that they can truly understand and experience reality the way it's meant to be. So if that sounds interesting to you, please reach out to us to learn more at livingwiththespirit.com. Or you can reach out to me or Simba or Sarah privately. We all have different offers and different happenings throughout the year. And we'd love for you to get in contact with us to learn more about those. So we look forward to seeing you on the next podcast. Thank you, Simba.
Thank you. Lovely.
See y'all later.
See you.
Thank you so much for tuning in. And please send us a DM for any questions, inquiries, or consultations. Please follow us on YouTube, on Instagram, on Facebook, and on LinkedIn. And please visit our website, livingwiththespirit.com, to read more about us and what we do. And remember, freedom and purpose is your birthright. Lots of love.